From the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor a harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Hey, folks, welcome to the On the X podcast. Powered by DuckSouth.com. I'm J. Paul Jackson, and I'll be with you today along with my co-hosts Rocky LaFleur and Josh Webb. And Houston Kenny, he couldn't be with us today, but we have a very special guest co-host joining us today also of Delta Waterfowl and, of course, national duck calling fame, Mr. T.J. Mallett. T.J., welcome on the show, buddy.
I'm sure glad to be here, J. Paul. Rocky, Josh, I sure do appreciate y'all having me. I'm looking forward to kicking this thing off and having a heck of a time.
Well, we're glad you can make time to be with us today. We really appreciate it, bud.
It's really good to have you, TJ. TJ and I have known each other a good while. TJ actually helped when he was in college.
High school.
Were you in high school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my first guiding experience with you back in high school. Yeah.
TJ guided for me, and TJ also helped me build my lodge that I have
That's
now,
right.
Mossy Island Outfitters. So TJ and I have spent a few days around each other. But anyway, hey, guys, look, just to jump right into this thing, did you know that it was National Tell-A-Joke Day today?
No way.
I didn't.
Joke.
I've got one for you guys, and see if you can figure this out real quick, and then we'll jump on into some other stuff. But here's my riddle for the day. There were 30 cows on a hill and 28 chickens. How many didn't?
Oh, crap.
30.
I got 10.
You got 10, TJ?
Yeah, I got 10.
Yeah, I came up with that, too. That's what I got, too. What did you say, J-Paul?
I said 30.
TJ and Josh both got it right. How did you come up with 30?
I don't. Younger.
Well, there
mind.
Were 30 cows on a hill and 28 chickens.
How many didn't?
Didn't chicken? 30. I don't know. Where did you get this stuff, Rocky?
There's 30 cows on a hill and 28 chickens. How many didn't?
Yeah, I'm going with my answer. I'm good.
10. I'm sticking with 10.
10's a great answer. So we'll let J. Paul simmer on that one for just a minute. But anyway,
well,
hey, look, go ahead, J. Paul. I know you're about to bust.
No, I'm really not. I'm really not. I was thinking like 28 as the number of chickens, but you're saying 8 as A-T-E, correct?
Oh, he caught it. I knew your little snot.
He got it.
I knew you would get it. I knew you would figure it out. Anyway.
Hey,
we've got a fat boy in the podcast, and we've got a dork in the podcast. I would probably fit the dork status. So, anyway. Hey, look, did y'all see the Old Farmer's Almanac release their winter forecast today? Anybody see that?
No, I haven't seen it. Heard about it. That it was released today. Fill us in.
Yeah, it's real similar to what we were hearing before, in a warmer temperature expected in the south lots of snow in the Pacific Northwest and extremely cold in the Midwest and the Northeast.
If we can get some cold above that Midwest also, some Arctic blast, then I can handle that if that freeze line will come on down past Missouri and down into Arkansas, then we'll have a good duck season if it gets here in time. And now that El Nino has passed through, I can't do my Chris Farley impression, so y'all
are all okay. I am El Nino. All storms bow down to me.
Oh, God. Rocky, you were in rare form today.
I had an energy drink. I had an energy drink before we got on here. So, y'all never seen that YouTube clip of Chris Farley doing the El Nino?
From Saturday Night Live. It translates to the Nino.
There you go.
I remember.
And you're doing a really, really good job with that, but I got to tell you, you got to lay off the energy drinks. Obviously, this part of the podcast was brought to you by Red Bull. And Rocky,
they gave Big Rocky some wings, man.
Hey, look, on a serious note, though, we need to keep our brothers to the south in our prayers because, man, that flooding in South Louisiana, good grief.
It is bad. Well, actually, in fact, my girlfriend Ashton, her parents, they along with everyone around the Denham Springs area right there, around Baton Rouge, a little community outside of Baton Rouge. They lost all their cars, had about a foot of water come in their house. The entire place is just flooded out. We're actually driving down Thursday to bring a bunch of water, food, and a bunch of supplies. A bunch of people have donated, but it's a serious disaster situation down there. I don't think a lot of people realize how bad it actually is. People having to spend the night on roofs and little whatever high spot, whatever dry ground they can find. So it's a scary situation. It's a lot of water and not many places for people to go. So it's still a scary deal down there.
Wow, and it looks like we're just going to continue to have it for the next 3 or 4 days too up here in the Upper Mississippi River Valley. And of course, all that's just going to go down south where they're already inundated. What do you think that all the drainage from the Missouri River Valley to the Sea River Valley, Mississippi, Arkansas, is going to do to compound the situation that they've already got going on down there, TJ?
Well, luckily, I've seen pictures today, and the water's receded by about 5 or 6 feet, and I think the problem was a backflow situation, and now that the water's gone down enough and that excess water has gotten out, so anything, I think, coming down at this point will probably cause some flooding still, but not like we saw over the weekend. So I think the worst is past, but still a lot of folks that got a lot of cleaning up and disaster work, to do. So all the prayers and support that we can give the folks down there in South Louisiana, I know they'll really appreciate it because they need it.
I saw a statistic today that said 40,000 homes. Would that be right? 40,000 homes went underwater.
That's right. No, that's absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, everything from the Bass Pro to Walmart has feet of water in it. I mean, it's total. It's a 500 year flood down there. It's something they've never seen. And the folks down there, those Cajun country, they're prepared for water, and they hadn't seen anything like this.
Wow, that's just amazing. And, we just came off of a 500-year flood back in January here in West Tennessee. The Mississippi River at Caruthersville crested at its third highest crest in recorded history. And then in 2011, we had the record flood. Mississippi River was 47.6 on the gauge at Caruthersville, the highest ever in history. So what do you guys think is up with that? We're in a period here where we're having these tremendous floods. And then in 2012, the very next spring after we had our largest flood ever, the Mississippi River was at its lowest low in recorded history.
Well, Jay Paul, I really think a lot of it has to do with, and this is just my personal opinion, I I worked in the drainage industry for a while, but with the all the construction and infrastructure going up all over the place, when they create a footprint, they have to have X amount of drainage for that water to go somewhere. And with all the tile drainage throughout the Midwest and the North, they're sending so much water in places that it's normally not used to going. It has to go somewhere. That water's there, and it has to go somewhere. So I think we're doing a lot to, you know, kind of create these floods with the redirection of the water, and it has to go somewhere. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And the season, the past few years, especially up north and also here in the South, a lot of places in the country, we've had seasonably wet springs, summers, and winters. So that compounded with all the drainage has, I think, really caused a lot of flooding problems from across the country, really.
And that would make sense, too, because that would explain also why in 2011 we have the record flood, and then in 2012 we have the historic low water mark, because, you know, that water's getting off faster. I mean, it comes on and it comes off much faster. So, you know, in your opinion, a lot of the problems that we have, it sounds like, aren't so much climate change, but have a whole lot to do with being man-made and drainage problems.
That's right.
Would that be correct?
That's right. That's right. I don't think it, I mean, the climate change, global warming, I don't buy into that personally. I mean, might be on a little bit of a warming trend, but in no way do I think global warming has anything, you know, effect on how it is. But I think the what we've done with the drainage and redirection of water has more to do with it than anything. Yeah, yeah. But it affects all of us one way or the other, you know, whether it's, you know, from a small scale like duck hunting, or, you know, when it really puts into perspective when they do have, you know, disastrous situation. Because when you have a 500-year flood in different places every couple of years, you kind of start to wonder if it's really a 500-year flood. So, you know, something for us to think about anyway.
Yeah, obviously it affects, you know, through the line, it starts to affect, you know, duck hunting and all habitat for that matter. And that kind of leads me into what I wanted to start with, was your position at Delta Waterfowl, because you deal pretty direct with hunters and habitat and things like that in your job. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. I'm fortunate enough to love what I do, work for an organization that I believe is second to none when it comes to duck production and habitat conservation. What I do directly is I'm the development director. I work with our major donors and funds and foundations that help support our mission to create more ducks for the duck hunters. We are the duck hunters organization to fight to produce more ducks and fight for the right for duck hunters to be able to duck hunt. So my job not only entails just raising money for the programs that we do, like predator management and hen houses and our youth initiatives, but also going up north and doing nest tracking, seeing about the science and the research that goes behind the programs that we put in place. So I'm blessed to be able to get up and do what I love for a living every day in a great organization that does some wonderful things for duck hunters today and tomorrow. So I'm really, really happy and excited about it.
You know, I believe so much in Delta. Of course, for 7 years, I was the retriever editor of the national magazine. But the most impressive thing to me about Delta Waterfowl, and I can remember the first trip that I ever made up to Bismarck, was pulling up to the office there. And to put this in perspective, no, there's not. No, to put this in perspective, we had just come from the Great Plains regional office of Ducks Unlimited, which is beautiful and something that they're very proud of and should be. And then, you know, we pulled up at this, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's just ugly brown building there in town.
Yeah.
I turned to Dan, who was the editor-in-chief of the magazine at the time, and said, you know, well, why are we stopping here? I thought we were going to the national headquarters. He's like, brother, this is the national headquarters. And, you know, he immediately answered my question before I even opened my mouth. He looked at me and he said, you know what? We take a great deal of pride in this ugly building, because what it says is that your money, when you give it to us, it's going into duck production. Man, made me so proud. And after that, every time I wrote a check, I thought about, you know what? I know where the bulk of this money is going. Delta's done a wonderful job at keeping their costs down, their administrative costs. And you know, and I know that comes at a cost too for guys like you that are employed by Delta, TJ, but you can hear in your voice the conviction that you have, and it's obvious you believe in the good of the work that you're doing.
That's right. Well, I appreciate it. And I always say, I mean, people should be a member of both Ducks Unlimited and Delta Waterfowl. We're all
no doubt
on the same team. But I feel strongly about what we do, but there's a place for both, and doing what we do, we can hopefully reach our goals and missions and, you know, have enough ducks for everybody to shoot. That's what we all want anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and I'm glad. You know, it's always good to hear from the, you know, from the quote inside that you know, the money really is being spent for the betterment of you know, of the animals that we're supporting. And then on the other side of things, you're not just so involved with Delta Waterfowl, but I think a lot of people know you for your competition calling. And
that's
I
right.
Think, I know myself included wants to know how long you have been doing that, or if you have been doing it before Delta Waterfowl, or how that's happened.
I've really been doing it a long, long time, Josh. I mean, that's really where I got my first taste duck hunting, when I was 7 years old. And by the time I was 9, I had a duck call in my mouth. And when I was 11, my dad and I heard about what the Junior World Duck Calling Contest was, Richardson's own duck calls and Butch Richenbach. So he took me up there, and I met this ornery old man named Butch Richenbach when I was 11 years old. And he got me fixed up with a call, blew in the Junior World Contest several times, the Intermediate Worlds. And Butch became one of the biggest mentors I've ever had, especially when it comes to waterfowl. And lucky enough to call him a friend, and hated he passed just over a year ago. But from there, I blew when I was in college. I qualified for Worlds the first time in 2008 when I was 18 or 19, around then, 19, I think. Won the Grand American Regional up in Real Foot, Tennessee, around Jay Paul's part of the world.
Sure.
Blew in that, and then this blew a little bit more. I actually got into some of the dog stuff there for a few years. I know Jay Paul knows a whole heck of a lot more about that than me, but my first dog, Cash, and who's still my number one, he's a master hunter and placed in several field trials, is out of Achilles, so small world there. And got into that for a while and out of competition column, but got back into it last year, and I was fortunate enough to win the Mississippi State, and didn't have as good a showing as I hoped to in world, but plan on, you know, qualifying again this year. But speaking of, you know, contests, one of the things that we're going to cover later, I'm going to talk about cutdowns, but are the cutdown contests. They've really gained popularity over the past just 2 or 3 years. They had a big one this past weekend, and then in October, I believe it's October 10th, they're going to have one at Honey Break Lodge. In first place is $3,000 with a bunch of cash and prizes. I mean, it's incredible how fast, you know, these contests have caught on. So it's really something to see. But to answer your question, I've been involved with contest calling and with Rich and Tone calls. They've been a real, like, a second family to me and helped me a lot along the way for a long time, as long as I can remember.
That's pretty cool. And yeah, I'll be down there at Honey Break at that competition.
Oh, great.
That we have. Also,
yeah, I think it's going to have a heck of a turnout. I think, it's really catching on, and the more support we get, the more people we get, you know, blowing and aware of it, which doesn't seem like a problem these days, is better for the sport for sure.
Well, how long have you been doing the cut down stuff, or do you just go the Main Street side of it, or do you prefer the, you know, the cut down breakdown for you personally on that?
Well, it's funny you say that. We had that same conversation that last contest I was at. It brings two different kinds of fun, really, in competition, because I know I'm a competitive guy. A lot of duck hunters, and especially contest duck callers, are competitive people, but the cut down contests are a little bit more fun. They're a little bit more laid back. You can get away with a few more things, your own style. But when it comes to Main Street, Colin, it's you have to qualify to go to Worlds. So even just winning and qualifying for Worlds there's a pressure to it because you're not guaranteed that ticket to get there. So there's almost a business-like approach to it, if that makes sense. And it's, you know, the kind of the major leagues of duck calling. And if you want to be the best and blow with the best, that's what you got to do is qualify for Worlds and hopefully one day hold that big trophy above your head. But, I mean, they both bring different aspects of enjoyment. And really the best is just the camaraderie and the relationships that, you know, I've made through contest duck calling. I know I wouldn't be here sitting, you know, doing this podcast with you great guys if it wasn't for it and all the great people I've met along the way, including how I got and learned about the art of cut down as well. So it's a neat deal, and I feel fortunate enough to have done it for a long time, and, you know, I really hope it's not over anytime soon. So
I heard you recently. And I think that, you know, I've known you for several years now.
Yeah.
I was actually at Real Foot at that Grand American when you won it that year.
No
and,
kidding.
Yep. And I tell you, I think you're just getting better and better. You know, I think there's still a long way for you to go. And, you know, besides, you know, I know you're doing very well in the cut down and that's kind of a niche that, you know, you guys that can blow those calls love. But I really expect to see you, you know, have a top 10 finish pretty soon here in the Worlds, because I think you've got.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I think you got a lot more potential, buddy. I don't think you've tapped out yet by any means.
Well, I appreciate that. And I hope I don't sound arrogant when I say I don't think I have either. I plan to, you know, I want to be up there with those other nine guys when they're calling out the winner, hopefully sooner than later. And, but no, that would be a dream come true. And I appreciate the vote of confidence. And I'm definitely going to try and do it. That's for sure.
I mean that. And I don't think there's anything arrogant about that either, you know, for you to be confident about it, because here's the deal. It's like a football coach I used to have in high school would say, you know, the guy that says winning isn't everything, he probably never won anything.
That's right. So, that's right. That's right. That's right. If I'm not first, I'm last. So, I mean, you gotta go into it with that attitude, thinking, knowing you're the best, and even if you aren't, but if you're going to win, that's how you got to approach it anyway.
Amen, brother. Amen.
Hey, let me ask you a question real quick, if you don't jump in here, J-Paul.
No, go ahead.
There's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, TJ, and they don't, when we talk about cut down calls, it's new to me also. I'll just be honest. But
right.
Can you give a little explanation and history about the cut down call?
I sure can. I was new to it. I learned about it when I was late high school, early college. One of my mentors, and he's like a big brother to me, Will McBride, he's a real good contest caller and has hunted Arkansas river bottoms and towed me around for forever, and we still hunt together this day. But I heard, you know, growing up, a timber call is a soft, quieter call, finish them type of a call. One day I saw him bring out this just weird black looking call that just barked and was loud. And I asked him what it was. He said, "That's my timber call." And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. Well, I'll give you first a little history of kind of how the alt got started. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s in Pekin, Illinois, a guy by the name of Philip Sanford Olt. That's right. Started PS Olt Game Calls. And, by the 1950s, his call, the one that we used to cut down, the old D2 keyhole, was the standard in duck calls. It'd be like the rich and tone of today or some the echo today, something like that. And it was about that time, guys around the Arkansas river bottoms, Mississippi river bottoms, Louisiana, but primarily Arkansas, started modifying. One of the first to do it was a gentleman by the name of Lester Capps. His name was even on the ring of the cut down classic big contest they had this past weekend. He was one of the first to start modifying these calls, and essentially these old D2 keyhole olds, and it was around the 1950s when this started happening, is they get the tone board and they'd start filing away with some sandpaper, just different ways. Everybody, like, just like a regular duck call, is going to blow one duck call differently than the next guy. So it'd be the same thing for cutting an old, and every it almost seems like river bottom has a different style of a cut. Up in North Arkansas, there's guys that cut their call a certain way. Around Bayou Mita and White River bottoms, there's guys that cut their certain way. And down to North Louisiana and those river bottoms, there's guys that cut them a certain way. But it's almost kind of, in a way, a secret family recipe. Guys don't, share often, how they will cut a call and how they give it, their particular sound. And some people like different sounds when it comes to a cut down. Some like that higher piercing sound, and some like that louder, raspy barking sound. But what it does and what they used it for was they were guiding hunters back then. Lester, Caps and Monroe, they, in the 1950s, they'd bring dozens of hunters in and out of the White River bottom woods and Bayou Mita bottoms, and they would use these duck calls. They were loud and powerful, and they break flying, migrating ducks. And if you think about it, if you're in the woods and you have old Susie Hen land 150 yards from you, and she gives you just a loud, she almost sounds like she's, in your back pocket. She's not quiet. And that's really kind of how that all began. But with now the popularity of social media and the internet, it's just kind of caught on like wildfire in the past several years. It just evolved from guys like Lester Capps, and then it was Kurt McCullough, and guys like Will McBride, and other guys like myself that blow them now on those same holes, standing by the same trees, and on public ground, and guys on private ground also. But it's a different art form to the big picture that we all like doing, duck hunting and duck calling. But it's one of the purest forms, I think, of being able to communicate with mass number of birds, and especially when you have to do it against other folks. It's a unique deal, but a special one for sure.
You brought up the term barking. Can you explain what that means?
That bark is just it's a whop sound. It's more of it's got a bass, and it's how you present that air through the call. It's a tut instead of a wah 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 you would normally just blow through a J frame single reed duck call. So it's really about air presentation and creating that back pressure, because that call blows totally different than just a normal single reed would. And that bark and that bass, that rasp, and a lot of it, it's a loud sounding. Some will be a little cleaner sounding than others, but what it does is give you a real loud sounding call with bottom and rasp, opposed to like a Main Street style call that's still also very loud, but doesn't have the same. The way I compare it is, if a Main Street style call was a car, it'd be a Ferrari. Well, the Holt cut down would be a 459 big block GTO Judge or something like that. It's horsepower, just
more of a muscle car than finesse.
Exactly right. It's all muscle, and that's what it takes to, when you break a big bunch of ducks and you got a couple hundred ducks over the trees, and that's what you want to do. You want to sound like a bunch of ducks in the bottom of the trees loafing in there, and once you get them broke down on the top of the trees, you finish them off, get them set up with the wind right, and yank them back, beat a little bit, and watch, enjoy the show.
Man, that's fantastic. I'll tell you, I've never got to duck hunt with you, but this year I definitely want
to. We need to come with me, buddy.
I'd like to hear you in the woods. And man, guys, we got to wrap it up here, but you've been so much information today, TJ. We really appreciate that. We want to get you back on here in the next week or two, because I would like to talk to you a little bit more about Delta Waterfowl and hear about some of the things that you've got going on there. You cover a whole lot of different bases, I know, for Delta, and we didn't really get to delve into that. So if you'd come back on as guest host with us in a few days, we'd love to have you on here with us again.
I'd love to do it. I'd love to do it. Josh, Rocky, J. Paul, I've really enjoyed being part of y'all's podcast today. I think I've got a great thing going, and you know, hope to be back again soon. So that sounds like a plan to me.
Well, man, we would love to have you back. Now, at the end, you hadn't been with us, TJ, but at the end of every podcast, we all kind of have our last word. So I'm fixing to close it out. But before I do, I want to remind everybody that the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com, is brought to you by the folks at Hardcore Brand. It's not easy being hardcore. All right, guys, Rocky, first to you. Any last words?
TJ, man, thank you for the information, and especially about Cut Down Column, because I'm new to it. It's something new to me, and the information that you brought today, I mean, love to have you back, finish up some follow-up questions on Delta Waterfowl and a few more on the Cut Down Calling, because I wanted to get into it, talk to you about, you know, some tips, and also, you know, what would be a great first call to start with. So maybe we can get you back on in the next week or so and talk about that. But thank you again,
that
TJ.
You're more than welcome. Anytime.
Fantastic. Okay, Josh Webb.
No, I'm really just overwhelmed with info. This has been great. TJ, I appreciate it. It's good to hear, you know, like I said, to go back to the Delta Waterfowl thing, to hear you're excited when you wake up in the morning and go to work. I don't really think you consider it work, because you know that
that's right.
What you're doing is for the betterment of the land and the animals. And I know it makes me proud to know that, you know, where my dollars are going, they make sense and they make a difference. And then on the competition side of things, I've got to get to one and watch you call, because YouTube doesn't really do it justice.
Well, I appreciate that, and I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I guess my last words are, I'm glad y'all are doing this podcast, because that's what we need. One of the things we can talk about more in the future, if y'all like to have me on again, is, even though we might not see it around here, duck hunting numbers and licenses are declining, and we can't have that. We need to continue the future of the sport and make sure that the information that, you know, I've learned, Rocky, y'all, you know, everybody, we got to pass it on and make sure that this doesn't become something that's forgotten. We got to make sure it thrives. So if we keep doing what we're doing, you know, we'll make that happen. So I appreciate it again, guys.
Man, we were really, really glad to have you, TJ. I know you've got a lot more information, so we're definitely going to have you back with us again. But that pretty much does us for today. Guys, I hope all of you enjoyed it. Thanks for tuning in and listening to the On X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.